took a decision and know what is right. To know what is right does not require great knowledge. To know what is right requires inner burning. The minute you create this inner burning, you will come across real masters, real gurus, real knowledge, real everything to satisfy you totally. Otherwise, you will have to be more or less satisfied by hearing A, B, C, D. You might go from master to master, school to school. That is all you do. So here, what is meant? The state of bondage is overcome through perfectly maintained discrimination. So one may have clear mental concepts through reading or hearing. This by itself does not remove avidya. The propensities and characteristics of each cell have to change, and therefore must effort the practices of refinement. Practices of refinement, I don't mean the timing itself only. As practices of refinement, inner purity are needed. As avidya is superseded by vidya, the stage of inspiration slowly progresses to perception and finally to spiritual reading. Mental state gradually becomes free from all errors. Inspiration, perception, spiritual reading are three different stages. Once out of the blue you get the thought, and a good thought is inspiration. Perception will come after a few lifetimes. And spiritual reading will come after a few hundred lifetimes. The three words are far apart. Inspiration is an accidental process. Perception is a mental perfection, while spiritual reading is a total communication of the body and brain with divine spirit. Unless, as I told you, I repeatedly understand, unless you burn from within, unless you cry from within, it will never happen. No amount of exercise, no amount of breathing will ever feel you any good. To me from every known source, and yet they are not free from basic witnesses. So this mental memory does not help. You can make a show of how much you know, that in your brain there is a cluttered store of many things. Then you will say, I want to raise my hand. Like that, if you tell your brain, please shut up for a moment, it will never do so. And unless the brain can be shut off and switched on at our will, nothing can happen. He will ask me the question, if the brain is to be shut off, or switched on? Who is ordering it? Because in a human body brain system, what is there to blame? That divine fragment that has been a witness all these million, billion years, when it says shut off, the brain has to shut off. And when it switches on, the brain has to switch on. But today, the position of the divine fragment is that of a witness, not a master. When you let the divine fragment be the master, be the guru, then the brain will switch on and off as to the orders of the master. This separation of body, brain, emotion and divine fragment is very important. And to separate each of them is the first stages of pratyahara. See, in yoga, the whole practices, the entire set of practices is very funny. First you are totally whole, but you don't know what you are. Then you separate yourself into your various compartments and see each compartment. And then join again all the compartments to become whole consciously. The first stage is being whole unconsciously. The second stage is to be broken into compartments consciously. And the third stage is to be whole again consciously. So we go from asankaranam, that is nothing but a stage of total wholeness without being conscious. Then we come to the stage of pratyahara, where we tear ourselves into the various compartments and become conscious of each compartment. And then we put them together again in dharana and jhana and become whole conscious. And in samadhi, the divine fragment is the master, the body brain system is the pupil. You don't need an external master. You need an external master for your early stages till you reach the pratyahara. Then you will need a tremendously highly evolved master to tear you into pieces, into your various formations. Your emotion, your intellect, your memory, your brain communication, your body, your various organs, they are all torn away from you, piece by piece. And you are made conscious to see what each piece can do and how each piece is to be put together so that the function as whole conscious. Then that master's duty is over, then you get your divine fragment as your master. Your own divine fragment as your master. Then he will put all your pieces together and make you conscious of each piece and also your total wholeness. The day we will know consciously our total wholeness, that day we are enlightened. Today we are unconscious of our wholeness. Wholeness means to be on a path, to be equal to divine wholeness. And that is a stage not easily reached. So this is yoga. This is what we have to do. But the problem is, when will you do? We don't seem to come out of us. transcendental pranayama stage. Though we are not actually doing the transcendental pranayama that normally known, we are today even with our refining exercise, phase exercise and all, in a way, we are still doing asana and pranayama. We are only conscious of asana and pranayama state. We are unconscious of our wholeness. And the most important state, the most beautiful state, the real state of knowledge and understanding is the state of pratyahara, detachment, where every organ, brain, body, emotions, intellect, everything is torn into pieces and each one put under a microscope and studied. And then to go into the final stage of dharana, dhyana, where after studying every piece under the microscope, we put it together and bring about our own divine wholeness. We better like say God has made man, a human being, in his own image. What is the image of God? Divine wholeness. And if you are made in that image, we should be totally aware of our own divine wholeness. We are totally unconscious of it. Unfortunately, people don't even draw attention to this fact that yoga is wholeness without knowing wholeness, to the next stage of being torn to pieces and be conscious about each piece, and then to reach the state of divine wholeness. This is yoga. You put together what is torn apart and studied under the microscope. That is called detachment. That is called pratyahara. And pratyahara is a very long stage. Normally requiring 100-200 attempts. But to an ardent student, who is burning from inside, he can do it in one lifetime. And it is possible. But that enthusiasm cannot be described. It is so intense. We use our vairagya. It comes nowhere near. Though we have a great respect for the world, it is a mental state where we are not interested with worldly things. But that is not enough. You are not interested with even spiritual things. Now don't misunderstand. You are not interested even with spiritual things because you are spiritual wholeness. Why should you be interested in spiritual things also? Then you are yourself spiritual wholeness. Understand me? That is the stage I am trying to draw your attention to, where even vairagya looks very small. You understand? The knowledge of illumination achieved this sevenfold and is attained progressively. The knowledge attained is sevenfold. Other than exceptional disciples, I read again, other than exceptional disciples, the ordinary disciples go step by step and are taught what is to be learned about the sub-stages of womb, then of bhuva, and finally of swaha, for which many lifetimes are needed. Normally it requires 7 lives before one wakes up to get but the passing knowledge that may eventually lead to emancipation in the future. The jump across the void transpires after several hundred lives of constant, undiminished effort. This is not written to frighten the reader. As wisdom dawns, one slowly achieves the rank of yogi and rishi. The typical Indian word yogi or rishi is nothing but the state of spiritual wholeness. Consciously, you are aware of the spiritual wholeness. It is one thing to say that every human being is a God. It is one thing to achieve. It is one thing to realize. It is one thing to experience this state. So, the word illumination, the word is not proper. We have always given importance to light. Darkness we have always considered as ignorance, and light we have always considered as knowledge. But just as I have just now told you the three stages, where you are whole but unconscious, then torn to pieces but become conscious of each piece, and then you are spiritual wholeness again. In the same manner, illumination is first darkness, then light, and then total darkness. You can't see God, because He is not light. Light is material. God is absolute darkness. And when you reach a state of spiritual wholeness, then only you can see absolute darkness. At this time you will not be able to see light, you will be able to see absolute darkness. Before the vibrations of absolute darkness, the vibrations of light follow. But we have been given to understand that the greater the light, the greater the spiritual progress. The greater the light, the greater the material body, nothing else. The bigger the sun, the brighter the sun, is only a material body. Just as you have got a physical body which you have to throw away, the bright body of the sun is nothing but for the sun to throw away. So light is not progress, light is not spiritual. God, the infinity of God is total darkness. So illumination really means from darkness we come to light, and from light we go to absolute darkness. From wholeness we come to being torn into pieces, be conscious of each piece and go into conscious wholeness. These are the steps of yoga. These steps nobody will tell you unless you hear according to Guru Shishya Parampara. Without that it is never possible to know this aspect of real yoga. You understand, my friend? Spiritual reading results in a contact with the soul. I read again. Spiritual reading results in a contact with the soul, or the divine man, divine one, or the divine presence. spiritual living is possible only through the grace of Ishvara, the Gurudeva. I read again. Spiritual living is possible only through the grace of Ishvara, the Gurudeva, because it amounts to Sayam. So it implies the prerequisite that the disciple has established contact with Ishvara and, more important, has been accepted. At this very advanced stage, the phase of yoga abhyasa at the feet of an external guru is over. At this very advanced stage, the phase of yoga abhyasa at the feet of an external guru is over. As you go from book 3 to book 4 to book 5, part 1, part 2, you will have sutras which will tell you how to bring about Sayam. How to bring about Sayam first with your chakra. Then how to bring about Sayam with Chitti, the divine mind. And finally how to bring about Sayam with divine center. This word Sayam, there is nothing in science so far that has been discovered which we can use to explain. This will help you to reach the stage of Sayam. There is nothing in the field of science today, maybe even after 50,000 years, there will be nothing in the field of science which help we can take to understand that this will lead us to Sayam. Sayam itself is an invisible act to be done on an invisible object, to achieve an invisible result. You understand me, friend? You understand me? Sayam itself, the very act is invisible. The object on which you direct Sayam is invisible. And finally, the result that you will obtain is also invisible. Of course, from our standpoint. Invisible from our standpoint. But if we have already taken the step from wholeness without consciousness to be torn into parts with total consciousness, and then to be assembled into wholeness with consciousness, then you understand what is Sayam. To do this, you don't require an external guru. You need an external guru till you reach the first step of Pratyahara. After that, nobody needs an external guru, because no external guru can help you. Unless that guru is transcendental. If he comes to you in human form, which is nothing but Maya Rupi, and not human as our human idea is, then only you learn the steps of Pratyahara, Dharma, Dhyana, Samadhi. In Samadhi you do Sayam with divine presence. In Dhyana you do Sayam with divine mind. In Dharma, you do Sayam on the various chakras, not imagining but actually seeing.
Before that is the stage of Pratyahara. The most beautiful stage, when every organ, every part of your brain, your cells are torn up to pieces, and you become conscious of each piece, what it can do if put together. So this is what is yoga. And to know this aspect of yoga, a much more fiery approach is needed. Much more fiery approach is needed. You don't like your wife, your husband, your children, your food, your sleep, your body, your own mind. You don't lack anything. Of course, you continue with your obligations and fulfill your obligations to wife, husband, children, whatever. But you are aiming elsewhere. You are seeing somewhere else. You are targeting elsewhere. When that mad mood inside you leaves, of course on the outside surface you are still a normal human being. But inside you are born totally mad. You want nothing, you like nothing. You want to achieve this and nothing else. When you live on these two different planes simultaneously, there is some hope. Maybe in a few like that, there is some hope. Just stop here. You may ask questions if you have. The only segment is the whole word Atma. But I don't want to use it because you may have some other meaning. To me, the divine segment means a small part of wholeness of the divine wholeness. That means what divine wholeness can do, divine segment can do. This is a small segment of possibility that divine wholeness is. But we have been using the word Atma, Paramatma, so thoughtlessly over the ages that it is better we use some new word to understand more properly what we are aiming at, where we are going, what steps we will be taking, in what direction we should take. What today you are doing is what a housewife does when she brings bazaar in the kitchen. She washes the sabji, she cuts away some rotten parts, then she decides what I will cook today. That is the stage what you are in. You have to reach the stage when your family has eaten your food and digested. So your journey is from that point in the kitchen when you are washing sabzi to that point where your family has happily eaten everything, found the food very good and have digested. That is material yoga, that is spiritual yoga. There also in material yoga you cut the sabzi, then put everything together and in your dish comes the whole food which you deliciously eat. In yoga also, you cut to pieces and cook and bring it on a dish so delicious like that. This is also our journey here. Unfortunately, material world, only the housewife is conscious. The other members don't know what the housewife has been through. They only know the delicious food they need. Besides that, they know nothing. So, we have to take very measured, very calculated steps in the right direction, never looking back. And at each stage to remember, hold on my feet, I do not wish to see the distant scene. One step enough for me. This is most important. We are impatient, we want to run the whole course. Just one lifetime, or perhaps in a few days. We have to be content with this. Hold all my feet. See, by yourself you will not be able to remain on that spot. You require somebody's help to hold your feet, to be on that step, to be on that plane and not go down again. Hold down my feet. I do not wish to see the distant scene. One step enough for me. Understand? But here, each step is a giant step. And at each step, we have to be strong enough to hold our feet. Because the easiest thing on a mountainside is to roll down. Down and down and fall into the valley. That is very easy on a mountainside. To climb is difficult. And to remain at one spot is also difficult. Because all those who have climbed Mount Everest have told us that after 26,000 feet, for no reason whatsoever, even the forecast may be calm weather, suddenly wind reaching 90-100 miles per hour blow and seem to tear us from the side of the mountain. And the highest point in Himalayas is only 7 miles high. Our mountain is very million miles high. So you can imagine what fury, what winds, what tempest, what should be there. And then we have to hold our feet among all that. It's not easy. But I again repeat, if your fire inside is roaring, is burning, everything else will happen. That is the most important thing. As long as your sincere, real fire burns in you, God is not blind. Take it from me. God is not blind. And then your feet are held. But it calls for tremendous fire inside. First you have to build this fire, this tremendous hot fire within you. Because can any rocket go off without fire? It's not possible. And a rocket goes a few hundred miles up, you see, and falls. And for that, what tremendous fire it needs. And you are aiming at the end of the universe. You want God. You want divine wholeness. How much more power, how much more fire you need. Can you realize that? But a human being can hold more fire than all the rockets in the world put together. Don't worry about that. You have to develop this human fire. It is a fire that does not burn things. It is a fire that purifies. It doesn't burn. The human fire purifies, doesn't burn. But it can be more furious and hot than the fire in a rocket. You first build up this fire inside of you. Then see what happens to you. then you may not need many of the practices. The spire is very important. When you recite Om Satyam Param Dhimahi, I am not satisfied with any truth less than Param Satyam, then see how the fire develops in you. Don't be content with any lesser truth, Param Satyam. Recite this in your heart of hearts, in your mind, and build up the fire. Because ultimately you want the most supreme truth. You want to know that only and nothing else. The lesser truths are untruths. We don't want that. So keep in mind, keep on reciting Om Satyam Param Dhimahi. Aim for the supreme truth. Build up your fire and then see what happens. Wisdom comes in us not from books or teachers. It just grows in us, absolutely grows in us. It only needs this divine fire. This divine fire must be built up, and then wisdom comes into us. Discrimination will come into us. Then you will be able to do automatically. First, build the fire, the human fire. Then see what happens. We are meeting now on the 30th June.